Hey guys, and welcome to episode 41 of the OCDstories.com podcast. Now, in this episode, I interviewed Sharla Nicely. Now, Sharla was on the podcast with Jeff Bauer. I can't remember which number it was. I probably should have done my research. But it was great to have her and Jeff on originally. And I since had Jeff on again by himself. And I wanted to get Sharla on by herself to go into more into her therapeutic practice and her advice for OCD. She herself suffers from OCD. And she is also an OCD and anxiety specialist. So I think it's a real interesting combination to get her perspective, both from a practitioner point of view and from a sufferer. And she really gives some great advice in this. There's lots of practical information that you're going to be able to implement. And the majority of the podcast was made up by your questions. So either the questions that you emailed to me a few weeks ago when I asked you, what did you want to learn? So there was a couple of those I picked out and I used the rest in other interviews. And also I tweeted and Facebooked and Instagrammed that Charlotte was coming on the show and asked you for your questions. And I got sort of five or six from that. So I asked those, so thank you for your questions. And I think it's also good sometimes to throw in, what you guys want to learn, because otherwise it's just what I want to learn. So I'm going to try and throw in more user questions. So if you have them when I announce guests, please let me know. Or if you have them in general, let me know, and I can try and fit them in with the relevant guests. Charla's a great lady. She really knows her stuff, and you will enjoy this. As always, the podcast is sponsored by the guys at No OCD, and this is an app to track, or sorry, track ERP, allowed to track obsessions and compulsions. They also have an SOS feature, so you can press it in the moment and help you calm down and not do the compulsion. And if you download it now, you'll get all the new updates, which they release soon when that comes out. It will be on Android in a month or so, I believe. But yeah, if you do decide to download it, it's free, and they will donate money to an OCD charity, and it also supports the podcast. So check them out. And yeah, so let me know what you like about the interview with Sharla. Let me know how I can improve it. Let me know, what you're implementing and trying. Also let Sharla know. She loves the feedback. She loves to interact with the community. And it's OCD week, this guys. OCD week this week, guys. So try and take part in that. Try and break down stigma if possible, in a friendly, kind way, as I talked about, I think, in episode 31, maybe. I don't know. So thanks, guys, and enjoy. In today's episode of the OCD Stories podcast, I have Sharla Nicely on for a second time. Sharla is an anxiety disorders treatment specialist in Atlanta, and author of the forthcoming book Is Fred in the Refrigerator? Welcome back to the show, Sharla.
Thank you for having me again. It's an honor.
Absolutely. It was obviously it was yourself and Jeff on before. I've had Jeff on since by himself, so I had to get you on to dig in further. So obviously you explained, your OCD story on the first interview we did, and I encourage people to go listen to that. But I guess top line, if you give us a summary of your OCD story for those who didn't originally hear.
Sure. So I've had OCD for as long as I can remember, since I was probably five, I'm guessing, 5 or 6. Hid it from everybody until my mid-30s. Had been trying on and off since I was about 16 to get the right treatment and had almost everything except ERP offered to me. Everything from wrapping rubber bands around my wrist and flipping myself. Very painful, not very effective.
No.
Just basic cognitive therapy that didn't work, all sorts of stuff, writing letters to myself, nothing worked. I had pretty much given up and had accidentally come across the OCD Foundation. And I happened to come across them right before they were having a conference. And so I decided to go. And it was at that conference that I learned about ERP and was so blown away by it that I went out that night. The conference was in Washington, D.C., and then I went out that night on the National Mall and I tried it for myself and it worked. I thought, oh my gosh, how could I not know this? How could I have been in and out of treatment for decades and nobody told me about this? So I decided actually that weekend, I'd already been sort of toying with a career change. I'd been in marketing and sales for a long, long time. I decided that weekend that I was going to go back to school and become an OCD therapist because clearly there weren't enough people doing this.
Yeah.
I'd seen so many people and nobody had told me about this. So came back to Atlanta, went to school, got ERP therapy. And over the past 6 years, it's really been becoming a therapist and really putting all the pieces of my life back together that it's sort of necessary to do after you've had lifelong untreated OCD. There's sort of a lot of maladaptive coping mechanisms that I developed and other things that I've been unwinding over the past 6 years.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's great to hear. Obviously, good job in your recovery and also on becoming a therapist and helping others, because obviously your experience is massively beneficial to your treatment. That's how you treat others, because you fully understand and get it, which is massively helpful. Okay, so on your blog you have the aha moments, kind of this idea of a book, a video, a speech, can that one moment can sort of change your life, or you'll mm-hmm. learn something which you can apply to OCD. And I encourage everyone to go check that out. I'll link in the show notes. So I want to know, what's your most recent aha moment, or the one that's really been beneficial to you?
Well, gosh, probably the most recent one, and I don't know if it's the most beneficial, but it definitely is incredibly beneficial, was about falling into the Potomac River in Washington. Seems like everything that has to do with OCD getting, like, helping me is happens in Washington, D.C., right? So I was in Washington, D.C., actually visiting Joan Hirschfield because we're working on our upcoming book. And then my friend Linda lives there, too. And so Linda and her family and I been hanging around doing stuff at the Smithsonian and decided to go paddleboarding. And I'd never been paddleboarding before, and I'm a complete klutz. And when I saw that this is essentially standing on something a little wider than a surfboard, oh, and this is my cat. Hi, Murphy. There we go. standing on something a little wider than a surfboard and then having this really long paddle
yeah.
and paddle long, that I probably wasn't going to be able to do this. But even though the voice in my head, so to speak, anxiety, OCD, whatever, was saying, no, don't do this, don't do this, I pushed through and I did it anyway. And sure enough, about 30 minutes in, I ended up in the water because that's just the way life works. But I decided to just make the best of it. I did not have a swimsuit on. I had, like, exercise clothes on. So I was sopping wet from the waist down. And continued paddleboarding with Linda. And then we went out to dinner, me with sopping wet pants. what I was able to apply that was sort of an aha moment is what I learned from Reed Wilson's new book, Stopping the Noise in Your Head. And Reed's stuff has been very influential for me over the years of my treatment, talking about hearing the voice in your head, the noise in your head, and recognizing it for what it is, like recognizing that all this chatter in my head saying, oh, you can't do that, Shala, you'll fall, that'll be terrible, you'll be embarrassed, is noise.
Yeah.
And to do what you need to do anyway, to go towards what you value. And then if something does happen, you know, wanting it. So as I'm sopping wet, I'm like, okay, as we're walking down by the Potomac towards dinner, I thought in my head, I'm like, I have a choice here. I can sort of moan and complain and make the night miserable for everybody. Where I can make a decision to want being wet because I am wet and just sort of go with it.
Yeah.
And that's one of the main premises of Reed's material is sort of embracing that which is uncomfortable. And in embracing it, paradoxically, we end up being more comfortable.
Yeah.
And so my aha moment is all about that experience. And I think it's not OCD related, right? But it's anxiety related.
Absolutely.
And it's sort of just life related. And so that's why I wanted to write an aha moment on it, because I think that's one of the main struggles we have just as people, not even people with OCD, is wanting what we have regardless of what that situation is.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I completely agree with that. And did you find paddleboarding, because I've only done it once and I loved it. I mean, in the UK it's far too cold to do it, but I did it in Spain last summer. And I found it so, like, relaxing and almost mindful or meditative, I should say. Did you find that as well? I guess when you weren't so anxious.
When I wasn't in the water, yeah. Right? No, I really, really liked it. I thought it was fun, and it was a nice way to have a different perspective of the river, because you're in the middle of the river, but you're going really slowly, and so you could look at everything around you. And, you're sort of on your own, so it's really peaceful. I really loved it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, I want to do more if I can. Okay, so we're getting to these user questions. So a lot of them have been fired in when I put your picture earlier and said I was getting you on the show, and so these are for you. So Zach wants to know kind of what the, and I ask this because I remember when we last spoke, you talked about that one experience where I can't remember why, but I think it was because of OCD. You were being kept up, or someone woke you in the night. They called you, and then you ended up, was it kicking the wall or punching the wall or something?
Yes.
so I guess he wants to know, like, what advice do you have for getting good sleep or consistent sleep? Because that's obviously important to keep anxiety and OCD low.
Yeah, that is a great question. So thank you, Zach, for asking that. Sleep is something I still struggle with to this day. And in fact, what the research shows is that people with OCD tend to have a little bit more trouble with sleep than people without OCD. So my advice, I'd just share what I do because this would be my advice, is I try to make, number one, sleep a priority, and also make the place where I sleep the absolute best environment that I can to get sleep. So for me, I don't sleep very well where there's light coming in or noise. So, I have room darkening curtains. I run a fan at night so I can't hear any noise. My cats, you can see Murphy's tail right there, are not allowed in the room because Murphy likes to drop things on my head in the middle of the night to play, and I'm not interested in that. So the dog can be in the room, the cats cannot. Door is locked, in fact, because my other cat, Milo, knows how to open the door, which
Wow.
is, fun in the middle of the night. So, I mean, I'm really set good boundaries for myself around sleep. And in fact, when I travel and stay with people, while I try to be flexible because I'm staying in somebody else's house, I try to honor my own needs and limits around sleep, and may go to bed before other people, may ask to stay somewhere where it seems like a little darker and quieter, because if I don't get enough sleep, I mean, my OCD does really take advantage of it. So those would be my recommendations. And here again, it doesn't always work. There are a lot of nights where I don't get good sleep. And in fact, last night, Bella, my dog, decided in the middle of the night that it would be fun to walk on top of me and over me and then around the bed, trying to figure out how she's going to get off the bed. So I don't even know what time it was. Turn on the light, let her out, go back to sleep. Had to get up early because I had a 7 a.m. call with a client, an exposure call. So, some days I don't get enough sleep, and that's where, you can pull Reed stuff back in and say, "Oh, well, good. I was hoping to be exhausted today. This is really good practice." So.
Yeah. No, see, there's some really good advice there. And sleep's one I still struggle with because I'm naturally a night person. And I just don't, I know I should be going to bed because I have to get up for, say, 6 for work. But it doesn't matter. I still, it's some kind of bias where I'm like, no, I'll be fine in the morning. And then I wake up feeling horrible when I knew deep down it was just something lying to me. Okay,
I
cool.
totally get it.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so Maria on Instagram, this is to do with mental checking. So she says for years she thought it was an obsession, and it wasn't until later on she realized it was a compulsion. And from what I gather, this has been a common thing among PRO sufferers, especially because they can't tell the difference between, often between an obsession and compulsion because it's all in the head. I guess what advice do you have for dealing with that mental checking as a compulsion?
Yeah, so mental checking's a tough one. In fact, yesterday, I can give an example of what happened to me. So I was driving to work and I'd cooked some eggs for lunch before I was going to work. And randomly, I'm on my way to work and my OCD says, "Did you turn the stove off?" And what's funny is the day prior, I hadn't. So, right? Life
Yeah.
works like this. And so, fortunately, the day prior, I'd still been at home and had come back in and seen the water that I'd just put in the pan just to let it soak, sort of bubbling up because the stove was still on like 30 minutes later. So, my OCD had something to work with
Yeah.
there. And it wanted me to sort of replay in my head, did I turn the knob? Could I see the water on it moving? That kind of thing. And I think there are a couple ways that I deal with this. One is I try to choose not to do it. So say, okay, I know it wants me to replay through all this. I'm not going to. I mean, that's tough, and that's taken me a lot of years to work on, and I'm still not excellent at it, but I think recognizing, wow, that's a compulsion, it's having me replay images in my head, it's having me sort of check through what I did and say, whoa, I have a choice here. I don't have to do that.
Yeah.
It's hard, but you know, you can sort of focus away back to what you were doing to sort of get your mind back where you want it to be. But the other thing I do that can be really helpful sometimes, and it really makes OCD mad, is I show it in my head what it doesn't want to see. So I would show the house on fire. So if it wants to check, I'll just make it worst case scenario and, you know, have the pan blowing up on the thing or the whole place going down. And I found for myself that actually will stop the mental checking because it doesn't want to see that.
Yeah.
It's looking for me to show it that I really did turn it off.
Yeah, I completely agree. That works for me as well. Sometimes I can't do it because I feel I don't want to visualize the extreme of, especially around harm OCD, because it's like, I don't want to picture that thing happening to me or someone else. Whereas, yeah, I agree. Sometimes I can do that and it absolutely stops OCD in its tracks because it's ultimately only trying to protect us. So as soon as you show it's fine, you're not bothered. Yeah. Okay, cool. So Chloe wants to know, okay, so she's about to start CBT and ERP. So she wants to see if you have any advice for someone about to start ERP.
So I think a couple of things that help. One is to figure out why you're doing it. So this gets back to Jeff Bell's concept of greater good.
Yeah.
So I think that's so important for all of us with OCD to do is think about why we're doing this. Figure out how it's going to make your life better, how it might help people around you, and really hold that in your mind as you're working through your exposures, because otherwise it can be easy to say, oh, this is too hard, I don't want to do this. But if you say, gosh, I'm doing this because this will help me achieve my greater good, it makes it easier to be able to sit through all the discomfort. I think another piece of advice is be completely honest with your therapist. Tell him or her everything, even the stuff that you find horrifying to talk about. That in and of itself is part of the exposure work. It's part of taking the power away from OCD is to not let it hold that shame over you, to share with them. If you think about your OCD wants you to think you're a child molester, that you would stab your husband or whatever, get all that out there. And then I think I would really make it a priority. So I think when you're going through CBT and ERP, it's really like a job. And I think sometimes people will get into therapy and not be fully committed to really putting in the work at home. It doesn't have to be a ton, but you know, do something every day to help yourself get better. Because this is really an investment that you're making in yourself, and you know, putting as much effort as you can, not perfect effort, not just right effort. Don't do it OCD's way, but put as much effort as you can in to really helping yourself get better.
Yeah, great advice. That helps, Chloe. Okay, so Heather has asked two questions. The first one is, so she's put, even though Sharla is recovered, does she still experience some of the same obsessions? And then, so it's three questions. So do you the first one. Do you still experience sort of same obsessions that you did when you were in a bad way? Or is it, they're still there, but you can handle them better? Or have they kind of morphed?
So I might just change one part of Heather's question, if she doesn't mind. I wouldn't consider I'm recovered. Because to me, that sounds like a destination at the end of the journey, and that I'm OCD free. And while I wish I were, I'm not.
Yeah.
So I tend to say I'm in recovery because to me that sounds like it's a process and sometimes I slip and I do. Because I think sometimes if people think that you can become cured from OCD or not have OCD, then when they, after they go through treatment, they're still experiencing some things, they feel like they've failed. And so I definitely want people to understand that yes, it is much, much better. I mean, I used to obsess all the time, like morning to night, I was obsessing and doing stuff in my head. And the difference is now is, OCD probably a couple of times a day, we'll throw something against, like spaghetti against the wall. Oh, let me see if I can get this one to stick. Oh, let me see if I can get this one to stick. And most of the time, it just doesn't. And they are pretty much the same obsessions that I've always gotten. You know, my OCD really doesn't care about anybody else. As Jeff and I always joke, because, you know, his OCD is all about protecting other people. My OCD is all about number one here, right? It's all about me. So, you know, it's this sort of the same things over and over again, sometimes variations on a theme if my OCD is feeling creative.
Okay, cool. And to be fair to her, actually, she did put speech marks around recovered.
Oh, good.
That was more me, how I read it. But, okay, so she also said, I really like this question. She says, in your experience as a therapist, how have you seen people's obsessions change? And the example she gives is, you know, when AIDS first came out in the 80s, or HIV, I'm sure, you know, people's obsessions really locked on to that. Have you seen that shift at all? I guess it could be, you know, Ebola from a year or two ago, the Zika virus. I think there's the new on-trend virus. Have you seen anything change with people?
The only thing I've seen, and this is not necessarily OCD related, is I think sometimes when there are various terror threats around the world, people will start to obsess a little bit about terrorist organizations and terrorist things happening. But that is more sort of generalized anxiety as opposed to OCD.
Yeah.
I don't know that I've seen, I guess probably I saw somebody who was afraid of Ebola, but it didn't seem to last. So I don't know that I've seen OCD pick up any of these others as like being as scary to the OCD as like AIDS or anything is.
Yeah. Okay, cool. The media went pretty hard in the 80s, didn't they? okay. So I'm guessing it's short for Emily. She wants to know how to address panic attacks for someone with OCD. So I guess it would be the same whether you have OCD or not. I guess any advice you have for dealing with panic attacks?
Yeah, so I would send people to Reed Wilson's self-help website to learn about panic attacks, and also his book that, oh my gosh, I'm not going to remember the name of right now, has panic in it. But anyway, it's the third edition. His book on panic attacks is amazing. And because there are some very effective ways to deal with panic attacks that entail some of the same things that we do with OCD therapy, embracing the anxiety, sort of noticing the feelings and sitting with them and all of that.
Yeah.
So I would say, too, that, you know, if these self-help books aren't useful, to find a therapist who can do what's called interoceptive exposure. That's one of the evidence-based treatments for panic attacks. It's actually a pretty short treatment. You know, you can do it in a couple of sessions, and very, very effective for panic.
Okay, no, that's great advice. And I'll link all that in show notes if anyone missed it. And more recently, I've been getting questions around medication. Some people get very worried, is probably the best word, in terms of, you know, should they take it? If they do take it, they worry that they'll be on it for too long. Or maybe the side effects, etc., etc. I guess, obviously, it depends per person, and they should see their doctor. But what's your take around medication for OCD?
I think
anyone who worries for it.
Yeah, I think it's exceptionally helpful for people. I mean, it doesn't work for everybody, and it's certainly not going to take care of all the symptoms of the OCD. But it takes the edge off. It turns down the volume on all of OCD's chatter. I think it makes exposure easier to approach, and it makes letting go of some compulsions on your own easier. So I'm a big proponent of medication, you know, the SSRI type medications for people with OCD. I think that sometimes people with OCD will think, well, if I take medication, that's cheating, that, you know, I can do this on my own. But I don't think we would ever say that about, like, if you had diabetes, you wouldn't say, well, taking my insulin is cheating. Or if you had asthma, you wouldn't say, you know, using my inhaler is cheating. Yeah. I think sometimes when we say mental illness, it's like we're putting it in a separate box away from medical illnesses. But OCD, I mean, mental illnesses are also medical illnesses, right? I mean,
yeah.
these drugs help us. We don't know why, but they help us. And so there's absolutely no shame in taking them. We want to use everything we can to help get ourselves in a good place. And if medications work, I say, hey, take them.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, absolutely. And I guess when the time comes and people want to come off it and the doctors think it's okay, it is doable. You know, I've seen people do it. And yeah. Okay, cool. So another question. I don't have the name here. So this is from when I sent an email out to people the other week and asked for questions. I've thrown a couple in here. So Anonymous says, I struggle with learning how to, this is a good one, to just accept risk. So the idea of, kind of we said about visualizing the house burning down, you know, how, the question is, how do you actually just accept, like, yes, I may murder that person, or I may harm that child, or I may get catch HIV from that tap. How do you kind of, I guess, look the gun in the face and say, you know, shoot, it doesn't bother me? Yeah, just any advice you have for that.
So I think two parts to this answer. One is, I think it's always helpful to remember that it's not about the content. So OCD content, whether it's worried that you're going to get HIV or burn somebody's house down or stab somebody or that you're a pedophile, it's all really the same. What OCD does, it just takes the stuff that matters most to you, uses that to get your attention, and then, you know, goes from there. So I think it's important to remember that it's not about the content. Now, when we have OCD in an active OCD episode, we could say that all day long, right?
Yeah.
and it doesn't matter because it feels like it's about the content. So I think that's where we want to act like the content doesn't matter. So for instance, yesterday, when my OCD is telling me that maybe I burned my house down because I left the pan on the burner, you know, if I'm acting like that matters, I'm, you know, digging around looking for my neighbor's phone numbers. I'm trying to figure out, you know, can I get home between clients and check on this? I'm thinking about, you know, well, how am I going to replace all my furniture? You know, I'm sort of acting like it's already happened, right?
Yeah.
If I'm acting like the content's irrelevant, then I'm trying to actually be in the office and be with my clients and help them and, you know, let the thoughts sort of be there and then just let them go. And I think to look that straight in the face, what's been most helpful for me is to really say to myself over and over and over, you know, I may at this point be burning the house down. The house may be burning down. It may or may not be happening. I have no control over this. So really repeating to myself over and over that this may or may not be happening.
Yeah.
Because that seems to help my brain to be able to be okay with the fact that I don't really have any control over that.
So it's almost on-the-spot scripting in a way.
Yes.
Yeah.
I do tons of on-the-spot scripting.
Yeah.
As I've gone further in my recovery, I've gotten better at being able to just dismiss the thoughts. But if they're really hard for me, I will do on-the-spot scripting for as long as I need to do, because that's what seems to get my brain to say, oh, okay, yeah, you're right. I can live with this uncertainty.
Yeah. Okay, excellent. No, it's good advice. And again, I haven't got the name of the person here, but so this person wants to have a career in mental health, which is awesome. She worries that having OCD and working maybe with others who have OCD could act as a trigger. You're obviously someone who retrained and you have OCD. So I guess what advice do you have for her for, I guess, coping with it or dealing with the extra pressure or triggers?
And can you get a sense from her question? Is it that being around people with OCD is going to get like give her OCD more ideas?
I think it's quite generic. I think she's just abroad. I think she's just worried that I don't know. For me, so I've just started my course in mental health psychological therapy, and I've been triggered these last 2 weeks around because we've been heavily dealing with suicide and self-harm, and also heavily going into schizophrenia, and not just schizophrenia, but like criminals who have committed murder who have schizophrenia. So they're like the real extreme cases. And for me, this has been real tough for me to deal with. So I guess maybe she's thinking about that, of working with people who, or cases that may spark her anxious mind. Maybe I'm
Okay.
asking it for myself now.
I think that this is, again, for me, where the greater good comes in because, yeah, I get triggered a decent amount with what I do, and it's because I love what I do. So it's not necessarily because I'm doing OCD therapy, it's because I really, really love it. And so, of course, OCD is going to try to latch on to that. I'm also new at it, and anytime that I'm new at something and OCD is unsure, sort of whether I'm doing the right thing, it also has more leeway to sort of try to get me. And I think anybody who's a therapist with OCD who will tell you that going to any sort of ethics workshop, which we have to do every other year, is like a day in hell because I sit in the ethics workshop and I'm like, wait, did I do that? Did I do that? Oh my gosh, did I know about that? Maybe I did do that. And so, and we all sort of joke, those of my friends and I who all have OCD and treat OCD or treat mental illness, will joke about how hard these ethics seminars are because our OCD just jumps all over it. But I think if you sort of go into it knowing that, yeah, OCD is probably going to want to come along too, and that's okay. And recognize that the more that you can use these as opportunities to practice, that you're actually building skills that will help you to be able to help other people more effectively. And just being compassionate that sometimes OCD will wallop you over the head with a doozy, and you'll sort of get stuck and start obsessing and doing compulsions and have to go to other people for supervision and help and say, is this real or is this my OCD? And that's just all part of it.
No, absolutely. That whole thing you said as well about, because it's new, there's a whole uncertainty around that. And OCD is definitely trying to, the last couple of weeks, trying to trip me up. Like, should you be doing this? Do you actually want to do this? If, would you be having these doubts? If it's like, oh, Jesus. So now it's kind of, I just got around that by saying, well, I've committed and I'm going to see it through. And by kind of making that decision, it made it easier.
Good.
Okay. So that's the end of the user questions. So still got some time. So I noticed on one of the ISDF talks you did at the most recent conference in Chicago, you talk about imaginal exposures. It was the one you did, I think it was with Dr. Grayson. And I guess not a lot of people know what imaginal exposures are. So I thought it'd be good if you could sort of describe what they are and then how and why they're good and where they can be of service to people.
Yes, I'm so glad you asked this question because I think imaginal exposure is tremendously underused, and I think it's probably one of the most effective tools that we have. So, what imaginal exposure is, it is imagining the situation, and you can do it a couple of different ways. So, you can imagine the uncertainty around it. So, for instance, yes, with yesterday's burning house pan of eggs on fire thing that my OCD was trying to convince me was happening. An imaginal exposure could be, well, I may or may not be burning the house down right now. You know, my pets may or may not be dying. The house may or may not be going into flames. I live in a condo, right? So it's attached to other people's houses. I may or may not be burning other people's houses and other people's family members down. So sort of thinking about all the possible things that may happen and then saying that yeah, those are possible. That may or may not happen. Those are uncertainty-focused imaginal exposures. They're also what I call worst-case scenario imaginal exposures, and that's where you sort of imagine things out to their logical conclusion if all those bad things did happen. So if I were doing an imaginal exposure around the house burning down, I would imagine the house burning down and the firemen coming and pulling bodies out of the fire and maybe I get to go on trial because I was negligent somehow, and I end up in prison and I die there. You know, that's sort of like a worst case imaginal exposure. And you can write those stories out and then sort of read them over and over until you get used to sort of the story. And in that, sort of realize it's sort of silly. That's sort of what we're sort of going toward. I, for myself, am much more of an uncertainty-focused imaginal exposure user because I'm pretty prone to depression. And what I found is that if I do those worst-case scenario imaginal exposures, to me, it's like it's happened, and I start getting depressed, which makes lose my motivation, makes me want to go crawl into bed, and I sort of lose the point of the exposure because it feels almost like certainty to me on the other side, like certainty that this awful thing did happen. So for me, I tend to stay in the may or may not because that's what works most effectively for me. You know, I know some people who do the worst case ones and they work really well. I think I pretty much always do them. And this is how I work with my clients, too, is, you know, for instance, if I have somebody touching a doorknob because they're afraid to touch a doorknob because they're afraid they're going to get sick, you know, I'll have them touch the doorknob and maybe rub their hands all over themselves so they're sort of fully contaminated. And then say out loud what the OCD is saying, but in a may or may not way. So if the OCD is saying, well, what if we get sick? Oh my gosh, what if we get the flu? This would be terrible. And say, well, I may or may not get sick. I may or may not get the flu. And sort of repeat that over and over again, because what it does is it reduces the tendency to mentally ritualize. Mm-hmm. And I think most of us, even those of us with OCD who are primary physical compulsion folks, we've got physical things that we do. I think most of us are also up in here doing stuff too, trying to figure it out, replay, analyze. And if we say the script over and over again out loud, even though it makes you feel sort of funny, but saying it out loud over and over again, that makes it hard for the OCD to be doing its mental compulsion work. And I think it makes exposures better because you've shut down that mental compulsing that could be going on and sort of sabotaging the exposure. So I am a huge, huge, huge believer in imaginal exposure because I think it just makes the in vivo exposure that much more effective.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. Okay, so touching on depression for a second, I never get extremely bad depression, but I definitely get enough where I become extremely lethargic, can't get out of bed. And I definitely, this last month, I've been slipping that way. And I think a lot of it has been where I was triggered by university and a couple other things going on in my life, as well as sort of stress was building up and I didn't deal with it. And anyway, so I guess what advice do you have for people to kind of, when you notice yourself starting to slip on that slippery slope, what do you do to kind of stop yourself or turn it around to go on that upwards trajectory again?
So I think, you know, depression is a part of the OCD recovery. And if you've had untreated OCD for a while and you've had those periods of depression while you had untreated OCD, even once you treat the OCD, you're probably still going to have some of those ups and downs with the depression. I think that, you know, if your depression swings pretty wildly, I think it's always good to go see a psychiatrist and talk about whether some medication might be helpful for that, because again, that gives us a little boost.
Yeah.
Or sometimes it'll provide sort of a floor and your mood can't dip below that floor. You know, the medication sort of things up. And I think that that can be super helpful for people, is saying, you know, I need this floor of the medicine. It really helps me feel better. So if depression becomes an ongoing problem, I always recommend talking to a psychiatrist about that. I think that this is where, when it starts happening to me, this is where mindfulness is really, really helpful, because what I find is I'll start having these thoughts in my head. Like, oh, your life is terrible, or oh, you're such a failure, or whatever it's in that day. And if I could say, wow, there it goes again. There are those thoughts in my head. It can help me back up from them and realize that this is just a stream of thoughts that if I listen to and sort of become fused with, it's going to make me feel bad. But if I can recognize that, gosh, you know, 30 minutes ago, I wasn't having this stream of thoughts and I felt better. And nothing's actually changed. It's just now I'm having this stream of thoughts. To be able to step back from it helps me to be able to see those thoughts for what they are.
Yeah.
I think I heard somebody say recently, I think this may have been on Dan Harris's app. So he wrote the book 10% Happier, one of my very favorite books on meditation and mindfulness. He now has an app and he interviews Joseph Goldstein. And I think it was there that I heard Joseph Goldstein say, it's sort of like what you want to do is be sitting. It's like if you and I were sitting here together, Stu,
yeah,
and you watch the thoughts in my head, you'd sort of be like, well, those are just thoughts. You know, you wouldn't really have any emotional attachment to them. They're just my thoughts sort of going by like a ticker stream across like the bottom of a news channel.
Yeah.
And if I were to look at your thoughts, I would sort of feel the same. It's sort of being able to look at our own thoughts like that. And I think that helps me a lot when I'm depressed, is to try very hard not to become fused with those.
Yeah, no, great advice. And I'll link to, is it Dan Gilbert?
Dan Harris.
Dan Harris, sorry, yeah.
Yeah.
Dan Gilbert also studies happiness. Am I right in saying that?
Yes, I think you're right.
Yeah, I got a feeling. Yeah, I haven't read 10% Happier, but I've heard good things about it.
Oh, it's fabulous.
Yeah, I'll have to check it out. I've got, as always, a stack of books I'm still yet to get through. They just consistently pile up because I keep buying them. okay, cool. So it's OCD Awareness Week next week, I believe. How can people get involved? That's a good question.
How can people get involved with this? So I think going to the International OCD Foundation site, they sent out an email recently where they had a variety of ways that people could get involved, either in their local communities or online, because I think they're going to have a lot of opportunities via social media for people to contribute to the conversation. And then the spokespeople are going to be starting a tour starting tomorrow.
That's Jeff as well, right?
Jeff as well. So it's San Francisco, Los Angeles, Houston, Boston, and Atlanta. So they're going to be doing a variety of events. And so if you're in one of those communities, you can go to those as well.
Yeah, awesome. And are you doing anything for it or business as usual?
It's sort of business as usual, but I'm going to go to the events in Atlanta.
Of course, yeah.
Which will be really interesting. They're doing a talk in the afternoon about OCD and addiction. They're having Patrick McGrath come down from Chicago to do that. And then Liz and Ethan are going to speak after that. So I'm going to go to those, which will be fun.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. Yeah. Good luck with that. That sounds good. Okay. So what advice do you have for people listening to have an amazing life, to live an amazing life?
I think the best advice I could give is, don't let OCD stop you from what you want to do. I think that when you have OCD, you have this tendency to second guess yourself, sort of like what we were talking about your core.
Done it really my whole life.
Right. and I think that it can cause us to hold back and sort of not be our best selves. And I think that if you can recognize that OCD is going to want to come with you, it's going to want to pack its little suitcase and come with you wherever you go and say, you know, I want to do this thing. And I don't care if my OCD comes with me, and I don't care if it makes it hard. I want to do this thing, and I'm going to go do this thing because this matters to me. Don't let OCD dictate what you do and don't do.
Yeah, great advice. And I will try and remember that over the next 2 weeks. and also, okay, so is there any final thoughts, anything you wanted to share or tell the community? And also, when will your book be out?
So that's a good question. So I have a couple of books, actually. So the one that'll be out the soonest is Everyday Mindfulness for OCD. The title may be tweaked just a little bit, but John Hirschfield and I are writing that one. And that's going to be out from New Harbinger in October. And we're really excited about that because it's really a guide for the long-term management of OCD. So knowing that this is a journey, knowing that even after you've been through ERP, OCD is going to want to come along sometimes. How do you manage that? And so the book really focuses on mindfulness and self-compassion, and then playing games with your OCD. So we have a whole section of the book that's about things you can do to play games that help you to poke your OCD as well as to help you be more self-compassionate.
Yeah.
So that you're really the one in charge, not waiting on your OCD to do stuff, but really deciding that you're going to take it for a ride instead of it taking you for a ride.
Yeah.
So that'll be out in October. And then I'm working on is Fred in the Refrigerator, which is the book version of the story that I told at IOCDF a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And I'm sort of writing it like a suspense novel, with OCDs clearly the villain in this. But I also have body dysmorphic disorder, and I had an eating disorder as well when I was in college. And so it sort of talks about the interplay between my OCD, BDD, and the eating disorder, and my journey through getting in treatment and getting recovery for all those, and then sort of how I've been working on putting my life back together afterwards.
Yeah.
And then Jeff and I are writing a novel called The Keys Chain, which has absolutely nothing to do with OCD, but it has a lot to do with the principles that we talk about in Beyond the Doubt, about three characters, Zeke, Theo, and Lily. It takes place in San Francisco, and it's so much fun. We're having a great time writing that. So Jeff and I are hoping that'll be out next year. I hope I get Fred done next year. It's taken me years to write Fred, so... I'm going to get that book done if it's the last thing I do.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, next time we speak on the show, I want to be able to say, and with our new book live, and announce it.
I would like that too.
As I said, it's interesting about BDD, because that's something I struggled with in my teens for a few years. And in some ways, I said this before on the podcast, it was more painful than OCD has ever been. Anyway, I won't go into my story on that, but it'll be good next time I get you on to talk about that and share advice there, because I'm sure it affects a lot of people with OCD, and it's obviously in the OCD twisted family. We've actually got the second annual BDD conference here in the UK. So they might have an online stream, so it might be worth checking out.
Great.
Or come along if you're in England.
That'd be even better.
Yeah. All right, cool. Thanks for coming on again. As always, incredible advice, and I know everyone will be grateful for it.
Well, thanks for having me, Sue. It's a pleasure to talk with you.
No, absolutely. And obviously, when your book comes out with John, let me know, and I can get you and John on to talk about it.
Great. That'd be awesome. Maybe we can even try to be somewhere and do some of the games
that'd be good. All right, excellent. Cool. All right, thanks, Shara.
Thank you.
So thanks for listening. I really hope you got a lot out of that episode. And as always, if you want to download the No OCD app, it's free. They're Donate Money charity, but you've got to do it for the link on the OCDstories.com website, which will be in the show notes, and all other resources will be there too. And OCD week, you know, have fun, break stigma, spread awareness, raise money for the great charities around the world. And until next time, recovery is possible, and I'll speak to you soon.